This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Bringing our man James Hamm from the Insiders. Hammer, what's happening, man?
What's going on, guys?
What's up, Hamm?
How you feel? Game one is in the books. The Sacramento Kings are 0-1. But I think most people felt pretty good about the way that the game went. It felt like, and we hope, that it was two good basketball teams fighting it out. And unfortunately, the Sacramento Kings took the L last night. What was your overall perspective of the game last night?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. Like, I don't think there's any reason for panic. I think Mike Brown is certainly searching for answers right now, just because he hasn't had his whole team together all season long yet, and he gets them together with like 3 days left before the season starts, and that's not a like enviable position for anybody to be in. So I don't think we're going to see like the 43 minutes from Keegan Murray or DeMar DeRozan or 38 minutes from Domas, 37 from Fox all that often. But maybe a couple of times during this early season, as he's trying to figure out who the other guys are and trying to get everybody kind of up to speed. So it's a tough look to try to, you know, work guys into the lineup without a single preseason game like Kevin Huerter and Trey Lyles. But it's a situation that they're in, and they've got to kind of deal with it the best they can. And so I thought it was a quality game. And you lost, but you very well could have had Keegan Murray hit that three at the end, and we could have seen a different outcome, and everyone would be seeing a much different story this morning.
Yeah, one of the things that we've been kind of talking about is win or lose, the things that went right for this team went right, and they looked good. And if they would have won, they'd still have some things they got to work on. You know, you always want to have some things to work on after a win, but it doesn't fundamentally change what the team's performance was yesterday. I thought they played well. I thought there was things that they could build on. And you heard, you know, with DeMar talking and even Mike Brown talking, like, okay, we got some work to do, but this was a good starting point for the season.
Yeah, and I think the things that went wrong are, like, again, you're looking at a team that just hasn't played together. You know, if you look at the big five that they have of Fox and Keegan Murray and Domantas Sabonis, DeMar DeRozan and Malik Monk, those guys all played tremendously. De'Aaron Fox could have scored more points, but again, I don't think he played poorly or anything. Defensively, I thought he was really good. The other guys who played, you know, Trey and Alex Len, Doug McDermott for a few minutes, Keon Ellis and Kevin Huerter, they combined for 10 points. And you can't have like the other five guys when you're playing 10 guys come up with virtually nothing. And so when I look at sort of the bad that happened, I just look at a lot of that as just the fact that no one feels comfortable in their role yet. And that's because they shouldn't feel comfortable. They just started playing together a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. And again, like Keon Ellis was with the starting group last week, and now he's not. And Kevin Huerter was on the IR, and Trey was on the IR. And it's really tough for Malik Monk right now, because I don't know how Malik is supposed to put a second unit together as like sort of the leader of that group, when he didn't know whether Trey would be back, and he didn't know that Keon Ellis was going to be part of that group until just a couple of days ago. And again, what did Doug McDermott's been on the team since last Friday? So again, like some of the things that happen, it's fine. It's out of a lack of familiarity, and that will work itself out. But you know, I think that they overall the effort was pretty strong.
Him, are you surprised you brought his name up there a minute ago? You know, Keon goes from a starter into a reserve role with the return of Kevin Herter. Kevin only plays 20 minutes. I think we'll see that a lot this year. But Keon only played 11. Did that surprise you at all?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. But again, I talked about this with Kyle earlier in the day. Like, Keon Ellis hasn't really looked like himself throughout camp. And we're kind of waiting for this moment where, like, he's a very distinct player. Like, you just see, like, his energy level has always been just off the charts. And, you know, like, his defensive energy level is crazy. And as soon as he steps on the court, it's just like, you know, you can't stop from, like, watching him because he just stands out. And I don't really feel like we've seen that. Like, I even talked about it on, like, some of his dunks, like the breakaway dunks, it feels like he was barely finishing some of his dunks. And I thought that was weird. It just feels like for whatever reason, he's not playing with the same like energy and pep that he usually has. And I don't know if it's that he worked really hard all summer and got all the way to training camp and had sort of burned himself out or something. Or whatever the reason, but what I can say is that like all through training camp, he had an opportunity to just take that job.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of us felt super confident that he went in and just took it. And if he did, he would have been starting last night and Kevin Herter would have been brought back slowly into the fold. But for my money, like I think that there's going to be a point where Keon needs to figure out what it is that he's not doing. Versus what the player he was last year. And, you know, again, every player makes adjustments and everything else. And I'm not saying he didn't work hard during the summer because I know he did. But for whatever reason, he just looks like a little lethargic compared to what I'm used to seeing from him as a player. And I kind of want to see him find that groove again. And so I'm not surprised he only played 11 minutes. And in the 11 minutes, I thought, yeah, sure, he was fine defensively on Anthony Edwards. I thought he started to give you some of that, you know, what we're used to seeing a little bit, but it wasn't so much that you couldn't take him off the court. And it's not about scoring, you know, even though the one steal that he had on the baseline and then he forced up the jump shot on the baseline. I didn't hate the play, but I did look at like the other two guys that were crashing at the rim, and he easily could have found someone with in a better position to score. And it's these little things that I'm kind of wanting from him to be a little bit different.
What did you think of Herter and Trey Lyles and how they play? They look like guys that were trying to get back into the groove of playing, you know, real basketball games. But did they look hesitant to you? Did they look normal as far as their approach, or were they looking like they were favoring their injuries at all or anything?
No, I mean, I think they just looked out of sync. You know, at the end of the day, I didn't think either one of them looked particularly like super strong in their role. And I think Trey, you know, he instantly had to go down and defend Julius Randle. And it's really tough. Like, I remember it used to be something that, you know, the great teams in the early 2000s that the Kings had, you know, Doug Christie would walk off the floor to go take a break and would literally look at Bobby Jackson and say, you better not let Kobe start cooking. Because once he starts cooking, then what am I supposed to do? Like, you're going to let him start, you know, hitting every shot or doing something crazy. Then that puts a ton of pressure back on the person who's coming in. And I think, unfortunately for Trey, they bring him in to like kind of slow him down or slow down Naz Reid. And by the time that Trey got in to play those guys, they were both cooking. And it's really tough to come in and try to be a cooler because that's just not who Trey is. So I think he'll be fine. But again, he hasn't done anything in weeks. Like, a groin pull is no joke. Sure, he can do upper body stuff and there's some like non-load-bearing like elliptical stuff that he can do. But overall, getting back in basketball shape isn't going to be easy. I thought Kevin Huerter, like, if he would have hit the first three he took, like, probably would have looked just like Kevin Huerter. That's what it kind of felt like. He was, I thought he was aggressive defensively. I thought he was good on help defense. Did, again, Anthony Edwards get cooking? Sure. But he's an excellent ball player, and sometimes that happens. I think overall, like, I didn't feel like Kevin stood out one way or the other, except for the fact that you watched the way the spacing opens up as soon as he steps on the court, and you could see it, like, right away early in the game, and then how it collapses when he's not. And the same thing happens when Doug McDermott steps on the court. Like, everyone looks over like, uh-oh, McDermott's on the floor. Everybody better be ready for the three-point shot. And, you know, again, Kevin needs to start hitting those, but, like, there wasn't anything in his game that just, like, left me disappointed with what happened. He looked like a player who just spent 7 months trying to work his way back onto a court.
James, this will lead into the next question. I got some numbers from Will Z, who woke up from his nap. I guess we sent out the bat signal, and he heard us in the background as he was napping, and we were talking about how many wide open threes they gave up last year. On average, it was 16.6 per game. 16.6 open threes per game. That was the 19th most. However, opponents shot 42.3% on those 17.6 per game threes, and that was the highest in the league. James, we saw the Kings give up 20 threes last night. We saw them give up a lot of wide open threes, made threes, I should say. We saw them give up a lot of wide open threes in Minnesota's 50 attempts. This isn't a one-game problem. This is dating back to last season. How much of a concern is it for Mike Brown?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always going to be a concern until it's not. They were so much better defending the three in the last 25 games of the season once Keon Ellis stepped onto the court and started playing major minutes last season. So that's one solution. But I also, like, if you look at the threes, the distribution of three-point shots, I think they actually did a pretty good job of defending the three. You know, Naz Reid started shooting laser beams from like 30 feet. Julius Randle is not a good three-point shooter typically throughout his career, and he lights you up for 5 of 6. But look at Dante DiVincenzo's numbers. What was he, 1 for 6? Look at the one other guy that did. It was Alexander Walker. He got it. I think he was 3 for 5. But Mike Conley, 2 for 7. Anthony Edwards, 5 of 15. So sure, if somebody wants to shoot 15 threes to make 5, you'll take that every day. So my point is that I don't think they necessarily were horrible defending the three, but some guys that typically aren't like crazy hot shooters did get crazy hot. And you know, again, if Julius Randle would have hit 2 of 6, like what is more like standard with his shooting percentages, then, you know, they would have given up 17 of 50, and that's only 34%. And that's where, like, you're kind of looking at it like, did they give up 20 made threes? Sure. But would that happen every single time they played that team? And I don't think the answer is yes, especially with, I think they did do a good job against some of their standard three-point shooters, except for Alexander Walker, which I think, you know, he's a guy that they needed to cover better, and whoever's fault that was, I don't know. I haven't gone back and looked at fully, but you can't leave him open on the perimeter.
In general, Ham, what do you attribute their lack of defending the three well to? Do you think it's a personnel thing, like the players that they have aren't capable, or do you think it's more of a scheme and the way they defend, their thought process on defending? Which one do you kind of lend that to? Because like we've talked about, it's something that is going on a couple, well, at least one season of. And we saw it in the preseason, and then, you know, it was something that was an issue last night. So do you think it's just the personnel, or is it the way that they defend out there that lends itself to leaving open threes up?
Okay, so they made a change in the way they defended the three during the season last year. We had a conversation with the coaching staff at one point. And, you know, last year it used to be race out to the shooter and get in their chest, right? Be like right in their chest. And that's how they opened the season defending the three. They changed mid-season to what they call the high five. So as opposed to like breaking down, taking short steps, choppy steps as you get close to the 3-point shooter and sort of like getting into their body, the Kings started doing, they would fly out to the shooter with a raised hand and literally try to high five the shooter because that's allowed in the league. You can't hit their wrist, you can't hit their forearm, but if you hit their hand on the follow through, that's okay. And so that's why we saw some of the improvement last year with the 3-point defense as the season wore on. I think they still finished like 29th, but where they were midway through the season and where they ended was like they did not give up nearly as high percentage in the final, you know, month and a half of the season. They're carrying that over into this season, but there are going to be some structural changes to what they're doing as a defensive team. You know, Jordy Fernandez left and went to the Brooklyn Nets. Luke Laux has taken over as a defensive coordinator for the team. It's his job to draw up these plays. They still have the same exact defensive identity where they protect middle and they shield guys towards the outside. What they don't do, though, their rotations are a little different. How they hedge towards shooters are a little bit different. And so I think the guys are learning some of that stuff. And once again, you know, we can talk about, you know, Kevin Huerter and Trey Lyles and these guys missing time as like why the offense isn't working all that well. But you also have to remember that that's part of the defensive problems as well. The rotations are going to be a little off until those guys truly learn what's happening and get back in game shape and all that stuff. So I would put it as like it's an issue because, or a concern, because it was a trend that happened last season. But I also think like we saw the team get better during the season. And so if they can figure out how to get back to who they were at the end of the season, they should be okay.
What'd you think of De'Aaron Fox last night?
I think he's trying to figure out, like, make sure that everybody's happy. And he's trying to figure out not where he belongs. I think he knows where that is, but he's picking and choosing his spots. You know, I think, you know, anytime your point guard walks out of a game and has 11 assists and 2 turnovers, he's done a good job regardless of what he scores. You know, I think we all expect him to score more than 15 points in a game, but you had DeRozan go for 26 and Domas go for 24 and Keegan's right there at 23, 24. Like, you can't have everybody score every single night. Even Malik Monk comes in and gives you 17. So there are going to be nights where each of these guys have lackluster, you know, overall scoring nights. But he wasn't inefficient. He wasn't, like, there wasn't anything crazy. And I think, you know, look at the point guard play from Minnesota. You know, Mike Conley was a non-factor in that game completely. And so was Dante DiVincenzo. I think he was 4 of 10 from the field. Connolly was like 2 of 7 or 2 of 9 from the field. I think he did a really good job defensively and he sort of stopped the point of attack. He did, you know, like everybody else, go up against Anthony Edwards for a stretch here and there. But look at how inefficient Edwards was. And that's the second straight game. I think against the Lakers, he opened up 10 of 25 from the field. Last night, he was 10 of 24. And, you know, sure, did he hit some shots that hurt you, especially late? Yeah, but I wouldn't put a lot of that on Fox. So again, I think Fox more than anyone else is like in feel out mode because DeMar DeRozan's there. I would have liked to have seen Fox take over in the fourth quarter instead of relying so much on DeRozan. But I also would point to the fact that he knocked knees pretty bad with Dante DiVincenzo midway through the fourth and had to go sit for a few minutes while they made sure he was okay.
And in fairness to that too, DeMar was really good in the fourth quarter. I think DeMar and Domas, I think, had 8 points each in that quarter.
Yeah, the only problem was that you had like the 2 or 3 plays in a row where DeMar really forced it. And the reason why I kind of point to Fox being out in that moment is that DeMar forced it against Jaden McDaniels, and he hadn't really had to go up against Jaden McDaniels throughout the game. And that's because Jaden McDaniels was defending De'Aaron Fox. And so I think that that's one thing I would point out, that when you have all of your players on the court, In sort of the reverse of like Minnesota, I think Minnesota has a problem. Like they can do dueling banjos, like, you know, one guy on the court, one guy off the court with Anthony Edwards and Julius Randle, but they haven't figured out how to play those guys together at the same time. It looked very odd when they weren't, you know, when they were on the court together. The Kings have this thing where when they do have all their players on the court, it shifts the defenders around pretty dramatically. You know, again, Fox was defended by a guy who's really close to an all NBA defender in McDaniels the entire game, and DeRozan wasn't. And then as soon as Fox stepped off the court, DeRozan felt what that looked like. Where as opposed to Minnesota, is that, you know, you started the game with Keegan out on Anthony Edwards, and I thought he did a great job in the beginning of the game defending Edwards, but Randle got loose. Then you shifted Keegan over to Randle, especially when Anthony Edwards went off the court, and I thought he did a good job slowing down Randle as well. The Kings have like one primary defender that they're dealing with, and you know, I think that the way that they balance their offense is really good, where I don't think Minnesota still has that balance.
Do you think that DeMar DeRozan, as time goes along, will be the guy making the decisions in the fourth quarter? Do you think that's just something that kind of happened because Fox went out? But he seemed to handle the ball a lot, run the pick and roll, and it wasn't always just the shoot. It was facilitating. But we saw, especially when Fox was out, him kind of being a de facto point guard, bringing the ball up, initiating the offense. Do you think that's a role that he's going to settle into here? Or maybe we see Jordan McLaughlin. Maybe we see Malik Monk running the point. How do you think that works out?
Yeah, I think we're going to see more Monk unless he's on the court by himself. You know, like if DeRozan is on the court without those other two, yeah, sure, he could be the backup. He's the guy you're going to run the offense through, sort of. But, you know, there's a lot of things that are like a lot of moving pieces that Mike is trying to figure out here. And a part of it is figuring out when you are doing half court offensive sets, you know, who are you calling the plays for? And, you know, we want to talk about this being equal opportunity offense. And that's true when they're flying up and down the court, but it's not true when they're in a true half court set. They are calling plays for specific players. And you know, again, these guys have to learn each other. I think what I saw from DeRozan in like that little short stint, like a minute and a half in the fourth quarter where he totally forced things, he just wasn't comfortable going back to Domas. And that's something he's going to have to figure out really quickly, because Sabonis was absolutely cooking, and you needed him. You probably should have got him the ball a couple of times on those dives to the basket. I would also point out, like, one thing that tells me that the offense isn't where it's going to be and isn't like working the way that everyone thinks it will, is that Sabonis had one assist on the night.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like the magical number. You look at him and he rolls out of bed and gets 8 assists. You know, it's not just that he averaged 8.2 last year, it's that almost every game in the season he was between 6 and 11. And to see him with one assist is a little different. So I would like to let this thing play out a little bit. Let these guys move around and figure each other out on the court a little bit more.
Overall, though, so we talked about defending the three, Hammer. What about taking the three on the offensive end? You just mentioned they're talking about Domas. One of the places Domas gets a lot of assists is that inside-out game to Keegan or Kevin or Malik De'Aaron, whoever. We didn't see a ton of threes taken last night. They shot at a fair clip. 37% is far from bad, but 11 of 29 is very unlike what we've seen from the Kings in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I believe they averaged 39 a game last year. And Mike Brown addressed that a little bit in postgame. You know, we talked about like the splash zone, like so much, right? Everyone is supposed to fly in and get offensive rebounds. Well, the Kings finished with 4 offensive rebounds, right? That's not what they expected. That's not what they've been working on the whole time. And when you get those offensive rebounds, it usually allows for wide open threes on the perimeter. It's how the Warriors busted up the Kings in the playoffs 2 years ago. It was Kevon Looney grabbing rebound after rebound and finding the you know, spraying to the hot guy, as Mike likes to call it. So anyway, I think that you missed quite a few opportunities there. And I also don't think that outside of Fox, they got a lot of paint touches. They weren't getting into the paint and then kicking it out like what they typically do. So they're still learning.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Each other, and I wouldn't, you know, again, I'm not like freaking out because they took 29 versus 39 threes. They also were really efficient in their 2-point baskets, and they're also like, look at how many shots they took versus how many shots Minnesota took. I think Minnesota took two more shots, but the Kings took 15 more free throws or something like that, and so they had a lot more opportunities. They had a lot more possessions just because, you know, of the way that they were playing. So, I think that there are some things that we should be concerned with, but overall, you know, you can't really like freak out over a 2-point loss to a really good team. And lastly, I would say this too. Minnesota was the number one rated defense in the NBA last year. They were better than Boston Celtics. They had like a 108.4 defensive rating. They were absolutely phenomenal. And so to come in and put up 115 points against that team, even though it's early in the season, but without really like five guys contributing all that much, is pretty impressive. You know, I'm not going to be all too concerned about shot distribution or three-pointers versus two-pointers. I think the overall feel of the team is if they take that, what they did against Minnesota, and they play that way against the Lakers on Saturday, against Portland on Monday, against what do they've got? Utah, Atlanta, Toronto coming up. If they play that way, they're not going to have any problems picking up win after win after win. That was a pretty solid performance for a team that is still trying to, you know, piece everything together.
Let's come back, Casey. Let's hold off. We've got some more questions for James, and we've got to look ahead. We've got the Lakers tomorrow, because we're going to suit up at the crypto.com arena. So we'll talk Kings versus Lakers tomorrow night with our insider from the Insiders, James Hamm, here with D'Lo and KC on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. A couple of quick notes here. Remember to head over to trainwithmap.fit/ESPN1320. Take advantage of the free nutritionist consultation that you can book right there on the website. You can book it through Zoom. You can do a phone call. You can do it in person. You get to pick. If you're a little more advanced and you already know what types of foods you would eat, but you want to know exactly how much, use the free macro calculator. That is awesome. It's right there on the website. Tells you what types of calories that you need to consume. Also has a link to MapTrition, where you can grab the all-day BCAAs that you see me drink throughout the day, the strength enhancers, the fat burners, and, of course, the protein powders that our man Greg told us so much about when he came in here and spent some time with us a couple of weeks ago. It's trainwithmap.fit/ESPN1320. Make sure you're following us on social media. This weekend, we're going to have some really cool videos coming out of a training session we're doing out at their beautiful Granite Bay facility tomorrow morning. Excited to show everybody that. Also, at the top of the hour, the World Series, baby. Game one, Yankees at Dodgers. We have got that coming your way again at the top of this hour. We'll take you out to the World Series, or at the top of the next hour, as we bring James Hamm back in here. James Hamm, our Kings insider from the insiders, the Sacramento Kings 0-1. However, they got the Los Angeles Lakers coming up tomorrow. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing that they have dominated the Los Angeles Lakers over the last 2 years. Of course, Casey pointed out earlier, it's the Lakers and Suns tonight. So the Lakers will be playing on the second night of a back-to-back. But what's this matchup here? Why is it favored the Kings so well? And why am I so nervous about this game tomorrow night?
Yeah, I think it's one of the weird mysteries, right? The Kings went 4-0 last season, 3-1 the year before, so 7-1 over the last 2 years. We also have that weird Domantas Sabonis versus Anthony Davis thing, which is, 10-0 at this point. I can't figure out why the matchup has been so one-sided towards the Kings, except for, you know, the Lakers just look like a collection of players still, and we'll have to see what they look like tomorrow. But I wasn't particularly overwhelmed by their performance in the opener on Tuesday, outside of Anthony Davis just playing out of his mind. And I kind of want to see this Sabonis matchup, because Sabonis is playing extremely well too right now. So do I know, I can't really figure out why the Kings have had such a huge advantage over them. Although I do know that the one thing that they can't do is they can't stop Fox and they can't stop Monk. And so if you get those guys cooking and really clear out and give them space, you have a huge advantage there. And so I'm intrigued to see what this game looks like too.
Yeah, and they didn't really do anything to address that guard defense in this offseason, in the draft or anything like that.
Yeah.
Did you see anything different between a J.J. Redick led Lakers team and a Darvin Ham led team?
I mean, they won.
Yeah.
That was uncalled for.
Even though Darvin went to the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago.
I'm sorry, LeBron went to the Western Conference.
That's a good point. That's a good point. But did you see, did they look like a different league coach team at all?
Well, I think we will never know, because the ball was slick and wasn't broken in. I think we're going to have to wait on this whole, J.J. Redick situation. Let's see how it plays out. Let's give him a shot to figure out how to be a coach at the NBA level. I think Darvin Ham, again, was probably the wrong guy for the job at the time. I think Darvin Ham should have been given an opportunity to coach before he got the Lakers job. And he was a really, really good assistant for a long time with Budenholzer in Milwaukee. But you need to know what jobs are good to take and which ones aren't. And unfortunately for him, he took a job that was just a buzzsaw and was going to run through whoever it was that was coaching that team. I feel the same way for a guy like Jordy Fernandez, who sat here and waited and waited and waited and get his opportunity. And now he gets a team that's just devoid of talent. And, it's really tough for a young coach to put his stamp on the league and show that they're the guy when, you don't have the players to do it. And it's also tough for a guy to get a first time job and turn around and you got LeBron James and a bunch of guys that, think that they that basically coach themselves, and that's not a good thing either.
Well, so, allegedly, that's not nice.
Allegedly,
LeBron allegedly coaches himself. It is funny watching what's the starting five? They do. I don't know that Darvin Ham makes very brief appearances in the whole show, but there's one particular clip that I remember where it shows LeBron on the Lakers bench, and I can't remember the game. It's obviously against one of the, it's probably the Celtics, and LeBron actually is coaching the team. Like he's, and you know, it's not unusual for you. You see this all the time when you watch the game, especially if you're at the game, you see it a little bit more often. The coaches walk out, the players go to sit down. The coaches don't immediately go to the players. The players talk amongst themselves for a minute before the coach comes and sits down, draws up the player, or does what they're. I don't know that Darvin ever pulled up the seat to sit down. Because LeBron was calling the play right there with the group. He was like, oh, this is what we're going to do. And they're going to come here. And when they do that, you go this way. And he's doing the whole thing. And it's like, yeah, I get it. I get it.
King it's knows tough,
what he's,
man.
King knows like, what he's doing.
He's an NBA legend. And, you know, the Lakers handed their franchise over to him. What, like, has it been 5 or 6 years now? Maybe more? 6 years? 7 years? It seems like it's been a long time. And they just handed their entire franchise over to him. And, like, he's played a huge role in who they draft, who they trade for, who they sign. You know, again, remember that Buddy Hield was a Sacramento King for an extra year because they didn't, you know, they basically stole a
trade.
You're
trying to find a way to crap on Russell Westbrook. I can see it. Like, I could actually see the gears in your brain turning. You were trying to find a way to crap on Russell Westbrook and the fact that LeBron wanted him there, which was an absolute disaster.
Yeah, not at all. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing worked out to be like a total mess. But again, LeBron is.
We would have had Kyle Kuzma. Goodness gracious, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what you do. You hand your franchise over to LeBron James. He has never failed a franchise when you hand it over to him. He hasn't.
I guess nothing.
He's won championships every franchise he's gone to.
Yeah, I don't think he had control over Miami.
Hand the Kings over to LeBron. I won a championship. Now, right now, at this point in his age, you probably don't. But the way he leaves it and the way it is when he's gone, sure, is not ideal. He went to two Western Conference Finals and won a championship with the Lakers.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, he's an all-time great player. But the other stuff, I mean, I'm not going to hire him as my GM.
Did you know he played his first game in Sacramento?
I may have known that. Yes.
Ask him about it. Ask him how he feels.
Someone should ask him about it. I don't know that that's ever brought up. I think I don't know if Sean's going there or not, but Sean, that was at the Golden One Center. The guys were practicing at the Golden One Center today. They're headed to LA tonight. I'm sure Sean's covering the Cowboys and San Francisco 49ers on Sunday night.
Yeah.
Any matchup issues that you're concerned about? Size? Anything that could rear its ugly head against the Kings?
Yeah. I mean, maybe a little bit. Like, Rui Hachimura has been a problem for the Kings multiple times. You know, I kind of want to see how Keegan Murray fares against LeBron James, and then just like. I think we should all be sitting here wondering, like, just how unfair is it the one night you start a game on Anthony Edwards and then have to shift over to defend Julius Randle and then come back the, you know, 2 days later and have to play LeBron James. Like, Keegan Murray, what he has to do as a player is really bizarre. Outside of that, like, I don't know. Like, they have a bunch of random guys that any of them can get hot at any given time. D'Angelo Russell is a guy who is just torched the Kings so many times throughout his career. He's one of those bona fide Kings killers. But overall, I don't love the build of that team. And it's the same exact team from last year that wasn't very good and that the Kings were able to maul. And so, you know, we'll have to see what the Lakers look like. And if LeBron is the same player he was on night one, that's going to be tough for them to win nearly as many games. Like, they almost have to have him not only play like 70 something games, but be that same guy who's like 25, 5 and 5.
Let me ask you something, James, because you talked about it a little bit on the Insiders earlier and just want to bring it up again. We saw DeMar DeRozan guarding Julius Randle in that fourth quarter last night. And you've talked about in the past about how, you know, that may be where they miss Harrison Barnes. He's a guy that will guard Julius Randle, will guard Zion, will guard LeBron James. Do you think, after seeing it maybe one time and getting a feel for what it looks like, do you think DeMar DeRozan can be that type of guy that takes on those different assignments of maybe, like I said, those guys are different body types, right? That you would just kind of throw Harrison, hey, good luck, Harrison. Do you think DeMar, after seeing him against Julius Randle, might be able to hold up against those type of assignments?
I don't know. I mean, Julius Randle did go crazy last night. I think it's going to be tough. Like, it depends on the night. DeMar DeRozan is, like, he's been in the league, what, year 16, right? So he's a smart guy. He knows the game of basketball. As a team defender, he's going to be fine. Even as, like, a one-on-one defender against, I think he's going to be better against sort of the power guys than he is against, like, speed and quickness. Just because, you know, he's 35 years old. Is he going to be the problem of the Kings defense? I mean, he might not be a solution, but I'd also, like, I've talked about how much Harrison Barnes helped, you know, defend some of those guys, but it's not like Zion Williamson didn't torch him every single time the Kings put him. That was just the guy the Kings put on players. Mm-hmm. And I would say the same about LeBron. You know, like, Harrison did his best to slow those guys down, but he didn't stop anybody. And at the end of the day, Harrison Barnes, especially, like, defending the three, wasn't very good. I think DeMar DeRozan can be perfectly fine, especially defending the perimeter a little bit. As far as, like, defending the biggest of the bigs or a guy like LeBron, I don't love that. You know, I think that's why you have Keegan Murray, and I think it's why all of us were hoping to see more Keon Ellis. So Keon Ellis could do something like defend a guy like Anthony Edwards on the perimeter and allow Keegan Murray to go defend a guy like Julius Randle. But until that kind of comes to fruition and he earns his way back into, like, a full-fledged rotational spot, I think we're going to have, you know, a lot more of, like, Keegan Murray, and then whoever has to guard everybody else it could be a problem.
I think one thing for us, Hammer, that we spent a lot of time talking about, particularly to open the show, was DeMar DeRozan is as advertised. Like, he was so good last night, and the fact that he scored 26 points while taking two threes and making zero of them that's the DeMar DeRozan statistic. Like, that's the one where we're like, yeah, this dude's going to be able to dominate the mid-range. He's going to be able to dominate different parts of the floor. Like, he was exactly what we talked about since July 5th or 6th or whatever day that was.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the three-point shot, you almost have to abandon the idea of it. And if he hits one, he hits one. But it's going to be like him going one of three. You can't expect him to do much more than that. Mm-hmm. It's just not his bag. I'd say the other thing that we talked about once before, and I think really, really showed up in game one, was that he got to the free throw line 14 times. And not only did he get to the free throw line, but the Kings went to the free throw line like 35 or 36 times. Mm-hmm. And, like, way more than Minnesota. And I don't feel like he's like your standard foul grifter. But his pump fakes and stuff, like, just gets him to the line all the time. And the way he plays, the way he leans into a player when he's going through traffic, like, I think this is one of those things that's really going to help the Kings this year, because what it does is allows you to play with a lot of pace. Mm-hmm. And have breaks, because he gives you basically the equivalent of many timeouts all over the court, because he keeps stopping the game by going to the free throw line. So you can play at a faster pace and not worry about it nearly as much, because, you know, every fourth, fifth possession, you're getting to the foul line, whether it's him or someone else. So, yeah, he definitely is as advertised. I was, again, a little bit disappointed in the way he forced stuff there for just like a minute and a half, but those things happen, you know. It's not like De'Aaron Fox or Malik Monk or even Domantas Sabonis haven't forced things on multiple occasions and cost the team a couple of possessions. You know, we had we have the game last year where Sabonis turned the ball over 9 times. We're going to have like disappointing moments for everybody. But that would be the one thing where it's like with this team specifically, you don't have to have him be like Superman. Like, he doesn't have to be that guy all the time. Once he figures that out, that relying on the players around you and the system, I think he'll even be better. I don't think better as in he'll score more points all the time. But I still think he's a walking bucket.
And I was telling Kyle about it, and I saw the same thing that you guys saw in that fourth quarter stretch where, you know, maybe I called it earlier, he went back to Chicago, DeMar a little bit. But one positive that I thought came out of that was the lead had got to 6 from Minnesota. And right when it got to 6, it was like, oh, man, they're on the brink. Like, they need a bucket in a bad way right now, so this could get out of hand. DeMar was able to put his head down, attacked the basket, got fouled, got to the line, and hit his free throws, got it to 4. And that's something that seemed to be missing last year, somebody that could slow down those type of runs and, you know, keep the game from getting out of hand. And instead of it going from 6 to 8 or 9, it went to 6 to 4, and you were able to stay into the game. And I thought that's one of those things that he's going to bring to the table on a consistent basis.
Yeah, it's a Zebo trait. Mm. It's something that Zebo did for that team that stopped them from being like a 20-win team. Mm. You know, and when Fox was a rookie, every single time the Kings got in trouble or someone started to go on a big long run, and, you know, next thing you know, it's a 6-point run that instantly leads to like a 12-point run or a 14-point run, Zebo would call for the ball in the post and go down and score and break it up. And even if it was Zebo getting to the free throw line, you have to have those players on your team, the guys that, you know, they shoot 60% or 50% from the field, but when they need a bucket, they score a whole lot more than that. And I think that's one thing that will kind of help break up the runs. And like, remember last season, how many times we saw these games of runs with the Kings where it was like 12-0 run, 8-0 run, 8-point run one way, and then 15-point run. You know, it was just like all the time we kept seeing these like crazy swings in a game. That I don't think DeRozan will allow something like that to happen, because that's kind of not who he is.
You mentioned this. I don't know. You didn't really elaborate on it, but you kind of mentioned it. You talked about the amount of free throws that DeMar took, stopping the game, slowing things down. What about the Kings? 35 free throws for them yesterday. That is not. We've seen them have 11. We've seen them have very low numbers. Like, that's DeMar, obviously, 14 free throws. He deserves a lot of credit there. But we saw Domas get to the line 8 times. Sometimes he could get to the line 40 times. They just don't call those fouls against him. But he got to the line 8 times. Like, those, it felt like those guys, with not taking the 3, worked hard to get to the line.
Yeah, I mean, if you're taking twice as many free throws as the opponent, that's huge. And I know, like, the Timberwolves were very frustrated with the officiating the whole night. I didn't see the Kings really get all that frustrated with the officiating, and it's because the Kings were playing like hard-nosed basketball, and I didn't feel like I thought Minnesota was not great defensively, and they were doing a lot of things to like reach and grab. Sabonis got to the line 8 times. Monk got to the line 5 times, which is not always standard for him. I think that's just kind of going to be part of the soul of this team this year. Whether they hit their free throws or not is going to be another question. They did hit 80% last night. But, you know, DeMar DeRozan like has that respect with the officials. And not only does he get them, but I think he's going to help the rest of the team get free throws as well.
I think so too, man. I think so too. I'm going to see De'Aaron Fox attack a little bit more in the upcoming games and get more than 2 free throw attempts in a game, but I think in general that's what we're going to see from this team more often than not. They're going to get to the line a lot more than we saw them do last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to see De'Aaron Fox be part of that.
Yeah,
yep. You know, Fox is the guy that realistically should be at the line 7 or 8 times a night, and he didn't play that style of basketball last night, Eventually I can see him, you know, getting more and more free throw attempts because of this.
We used to have a number of 30 assists a game. Mm-hmm. We like to see them at. They had 21 last night. It was a 2-point loss. They still got to 115. Do you think that's a product of the addition of DeMar, and maybe that 30 number should, like in terms of our barometer, should come down a little bit, and maybe they're going to play a bit differently with a guy who can dominate like that?
Yeah, I mean, you would hope so. I think that the this is a team that should have a ton of assists. Like, they should not get away from who they are because DeMar DeRozan's there. And I hope that that's not something, like, I want to see them around 30 assists every single game. Mm-hmm. That's just, again, that's the soul of this team. They're equal opportunity offense. They share the ball really well. No one's super selfish. And I would like to see them get back up to that number. I think, you know, you can't, DeMar is going to take away a few of those opportunities, but he should also add a few with, you know, pulling up and hitting the mid-range jump shot off of like a pin down screen.
Thank everybody for being with us. We've got Kings basketball tomorrow night, and then we'll get back here on Monday to recap the weekend and get ready for Kings and Blazers. So hopefully we'll be talking about a 1-1 basketball team. Hopefully we'll be talking about a San Francisco 49ers team that's built some momentum headed into the bye. But no matter what, we'll be here talking.
That's right.
If you're on YouTube, hit the thumbs up. Hit the follow if you haven't yet. And we will see you. We're headed out to the World Series, baby.
Yeah, man. Go Yanks.
Dodgers, ooh. Yankees coming up next here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Kings. Vamos.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.